You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
January the 12th, 2021, the House of Representatives expected to vote any moment now, maybe sometime through the next hour or later today, on a measure calling for President Donald Trump to be removed from office through the 25th Amendment. The 25th Amendment of the Constitution. The resolution moving forward. Now, it relies upon Vice President Pence to sign off on it, because they're trying to remove the president against his wishes, and the vice president would have to be involved in the sense that it would be used if the president has done something worthy to be removed and he refuses to give up, but the vice president says, I will help because I know he should be removed. Not likely to happen. And of course, in the last hour, I had famed Harvard Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz saying, weaponizing the Constitution for the 25th Amendment is wrong and scary because, remember, the next time it might be used against you. Well, in addition to that, we still have House Democrats planning tomorrow to vote to impeach Trump. 8 days remain in Trump's term at this point. And yet the House of Representatives trying to move him by the 25th Amendment or impeach him in the coming days. President Trump, according to Congressman McCarthy of California, Republican, the House Republican leader, McCarthy says that in a conversation he had with President Trump, he says Trump did agree that he bore some blame for the Capitol riot last week. He didn't get specifics, didn't quote it exactly, but just said the president did concede there were things that maybe he could have said or should have said. It's not clear exactly what was said because McCarthy's not giving details at this point. But, of course, that is just going to be used by the left to, again, blame him and say there's reason right there to remove him by the 25th or impeachment. And, of course, the FBI internal bulletin that's been circulated claiming that there aren't protests being planned at all 50 state capitals from the 16th of January through at least the 20th, which is Inauguration Day, and at the U.S. Capitol from the 17th of January through the 20th, a group planning these protests calling for storming state, local, and federal government courthouses and administration buildings in the event Trump is removed prior to Inauguration Day. And apparently the bulletin from the FBI claims that this group says there will be a huge uprising if you remove Trump before Inauguration Day under any of the 25th or impeachment articles. Let me tell you this right now. I don't think that group and that kind of event is going to happen, but if it does, stay away from it. Do not get involved with it. Democrats are divided over a new domestic terrorism bill. Now, President-elect Biden has made a domestic terrorism bill a priority, according to the Wall Street Journal back in November. And Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois signed on to it. But the ACLU is opposing it. They oppose it when it was introduced. Now they're getting more concerned that it might be pushed forward. Their fear is that this new terrorism bill will unnecessarily offend and attack and be harmful to marginalized communities. So we do have President-elect Biden's advisors meeting at the White House, or I should say meeting with House advisors, Democrats, to discuss a swift immigration agenda for the incoming administration. They want to do that immediately, and it's clear they need to do something, because what kind of a immigration amnesty bill are they going to have? Is it going to be for those already in the country, or will it go to more? Because we do know caravans are forming far, far south of us. And talking about how to handle or mishandle coronavirus vaccine, Michigan Governor Whitmer is trying to buy more doses of the coronavirus vaccine directly from the company, despite she has a surplus in her state. She's still pushing to buy more of it, which means others might not get what they were supposed to. And the New York Times reports New York State is tossing out vaccine rather than give it to those incorrect people. Deep into the paragraph of their story, they point out some of those scheduled for vaccinations, because they don't meet some of the criteria already, they're not going to get the shots, and if they are not used by a certain time, they have to be thrown out. Democrat control. You going to be happy with that? Stand by, please.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Here's the situation, though. We have, there are millions of Americans, almost all white, almost all Republicans, who somehow need to be deprogrammed. It's as if they are members of a cult, the Trumpist cult, and who have to be deprogrammed.
Wow. If you're a Trump supporter, you need to be deprogrammed. That's a statement of a Washington Post columnist, also a contributor to MSNBC, Eugene Robinson. We need to reprogram these people. And he said, keep in mind, they're basically white anyway. There's an editorial published by the Washington Post saying that Trump should be impeached, but that alone won't remove white supremacy from America. If you were a Trump supporter, you're always going to be labeled a white supremacist. You will be. I don't care if you're black, brown, yellow, or red. You are in favor of white supremacy. Does that sound anywhere near actual fact or more propaganda? And propaganda comes in trying to reprogram people, tell them what you've been thinking is wrong. Well, we've seen already what they are doing wherever they can to put pressure on anyone who has been associated with Trump. I told you again, my greatest fear, it's not me. You come on. I've not supported Trump in anything and everything all the time, but still, come on. That's why this program's on the air, and it's more important now than ever. But I do have a fear. I mean, a true fear and concern for minority Americans who said they heard what Trump said, especially in the black community, said, what do you got to lose by voting for me compared to what you've been getting from the Democrats all these years? And they put him in and they voted for him again, and more of them this time. And for Latinos, even though the left was always saying he's afraid of the brown menace and is a racist, no, he's doing good for our country, and I think we need to control our border. I told you earlier, in case you missed it, in the previous hour, the chief content officer of Forbes magazine, warning companies, if you consider hiring any of these folks that work for Trump, Forbes magazine will assume everything your company or firm talks about is a lie. And the anti-Trump Lincoln Project, already acknowledging it is building a database of Trump officials and staffers to hold these people professionally accountable because they supported President Trump. And Hillary Clinton, in her editorial yesterday in the Washington Post, saying Trump should be impeached, but that alone will not remove white supremacy from America. And what else have they done? Well, of course, we talked about them shutting down funding for PACs, numerous banks and so forth coming forward and saying, we're not going to allow any money to go to any Republican PACs or anything that might be possibly related to Trump. And then we come to this whole thing of social media platform. Parler, just shut off by Google. Just shut it down. You apparently can still go get it if you go online and do it as a search as opposed to having the app. But the app, they shut down. That's being contested. And they shut down Twitter to Trump permanently, Facebook permanently. And those kinds of decisions, what does that do? Well, here's Alan Dershowitz, former Harvard professor, Alan Dershowitz.
When YouTube says, or when Twitter says, we're not going to put President Trump's statements up there because they're not true, they claim, or because they may incite, or because of other things, then you have to ask yourself, why do they allow other things to go on? Why do they allow blatant lies, falsehoods, defamations, bigotry of every kind on there? Doesn't that send a mixed message?
Yeah, a mixed message. There's another part of that bite. We'll come back to it in a minute. But let me give you details of what they've actually done. Twitter did say Trump is banned permanently, just not going to be allowed on at all. The only way he was able the other day, at the end of the riot last Wednesday, to get a statement out was to use a White House Twitter account or someone else's to make his statement that it was wrong, it shouldn't have happened. And I don't know at what point he tried to do it, but he clearly didn't have access to his own tweet account at that point. Facebook, the same thing. Facebook announced yesterday it's going to remove all content that contains the phrase, stop the steal, ahead of Biden's inauguration day, January 20th. Boy, that just scared me. I just remembered I almost used that phrase in one of my Facebook postings for today promoting the program. Whew, I would have been off forever, wouldn't I? Or at least to January 20th. But that's what they're going to try to do. So big tech companies ramping up efforts to police content that they claim could lead to potential harm offline. We do know that in the summer of last year, when all the rioting, looting, arson, attacks on police, federal court buildings, federal, state, and so forth were happening, Twitter and Facebook were filled with images and basically encouraging folks, here's where it's going to be. And Facebook did nada to shut it down. Oh, they will tell you, we're working to control it. And now the Facebook COO says, we have no plans to lift the ban, the permanent ban on Donald Trump. She says, at least through the transition, we've been very clear, it's not going to happen. And she was asked at one point, and she responded, so why did we do it? Well, we've clearly established principles that say you cannot call for violence. Show me where Trump called for violence, actual violence. It doesn't exist. If it is, believe me, they'd be bannering it everywhere, where he said, go to the Capitol and riot. The closest he said is we're going to have a big rally on the certification day. Show up. It's going to be wild. Or maybe even say go wild. But what does that mean? So Facebook locked Trump out of his Facebook, Instagram accounts indefinitely, forever, they say now. What does Alan Dershowitz say about that decision again?
When you say certain things are censored, but other things are permitted, doesn't it sound like these platforms are saying the other things that are permitted, we vetted them and they're true, so you should believe them? No, that's not the business that these platforms are in. Now, does that pose a danger to our Constitution? No, they're not bound by the First Amendment. They're private, more or less. They are really so powerful that the question arises, what is the line between private and public when it comes to massive social media and communications? And I think Congress will be dealing with some of those issues, and so will the courts in some of the antitrust cases that are now pending. But they certainly do pose a danger to the culture of the First Amendment.
The culture of the First Amendment. That's a very hard thing to define, but I understand what he's saying. I mean, it gives the – it's a chilling effect. As I just noted a moment ago, I didn't realize that they'd specified the phrase, stop the steal, is going to remove it from any time it appears on Facebook. I just realized that if I'd used that phrase, my account might have been locked or shut down between now and the inauguration day. It's their company. They have the right to do it. I understand it. But the point being, that's why they had this Section 230 under the 1996 Communications Decency Act, so that they could not be sued for any slanderous or violent material or pornographic material that appeared, because everybody has access to post. Well, if they're going to decide, no, we're going to decide Trump and similar folks cannot post, well, then, like Dershowitz said, everything else we allow must be good. Pornographic must be good. You want to incite a riot or a sniper to go on a wild rampage? That's apparently okay. Well, of course it's not. But he's right. That's a result of it. And look around the world. This is interesting. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, not a great friend of Trump, and he's not a very good alliance for her either. Nor is a leader of France. Merkel said that she objects to the decision of Twitter and Facebook to shut Trump off from social media, to ban him. She said the ban on Trump is problematic and that freedom of opinion is an essential right of elementary significance. Twitter, Facebook are being lectured by the German chancellor as to what is correct and right and fair. She says it's wrong to have blocked him. French leaders are saying the same way. And they also know that if they start doing that and they can do it with Trump, what are they going to do to us? See, that's where it comes back around. If they did it to him and they got away with it, what are they going to demand of us that we do this or do that? And if we step across the line, too bad, so sad, you're out. The Australian government says the ban on Trump is, quote, an act of censorship, clearly. Now, again, censorship is primarily falls under the guise of the government telling you what to do and what not to say. Somebody can come up to me and say, I don't like your program, you should shut up. I'm censoring you. Well, good luck with that. They can censor me by turning off the radio. Okay, they did their job. They censored me. I can't go charge them with censorship. You can't really charge Facebook, Twitter, and so forth with censorship, but you can go after them, as Dershowitz alluded to, and I trust. And believe me, there are plenty of people lining up to say, all right, these guys all got together and came up with this. That's a violation. Antitrust legislation. At least that's what they'll push for. But if the countries around the world are watching this, and yes, they also watch what happened with our capital, and they were kind of thinking it was funny and great and so forth. Now they're looking at this, they don't like it. The Mexican president also echoing, it's a bad sign, he says, when private companies try to censor opinion. That's from the Mexican president. In Russia, the opposition leader of Putin, an outspoken anti-corruption campaigner, he says the plea was unacceptable. Not based on a genuine need, but Twitter's political preferences. He said, don't tell me he was banned for violating Twitter rules. I get death threats here every day. Twitter doesn't ban anyone. That's the word from Russia. So again, back to the question where we began this segment. How do you deprogram people? Wait till this answer coming up.
I could be holding you tonight. I could quit doing wrong and start doing right. You don't care about what I think. I'll just stay here and drink.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I don't know. I'm a journalist. I certainly don't know how we can stop people. I know we can look to history, though. What ultimately breaks that power structure in the South is enforcement, right? There has to be consequences. And then once you get those consequences, I think then people have to take a second look at their actions, and they have to be much more afraid to do the types of kind of violence that we saw this week, last week, the violence that we've seen building, you know, with what happened in Michigan, the violence that's being threatening now.
Those are the words of the New York Times writer and 1619 Project creator, basically rewriting history, Nicole Hannah-Jones, when asked, how do you deprogram Trump supporters? She said, I don't know. I'm a journalist. Lie, you're not a journalist. You're not a journalist. If you're a journalist, you wouldn't come up with a 1619 Project and shove it around as if it's real history. She said, I don't know how we can stop people. I know we can look at history. And she said, there had to be consequences. And then she talked about to stop the kind of violence we saw last week and elsewhere. But she did not mention the violence in the streets as last summer. Because too many times there have been excuses, acceptance, look away, they were justified. People do that when they get angry. Nancy Pelosi, the people are going to do what they got to do. But if they're a Trump supporter, we will deal with them. And I'm all for that. I think every one of them, they were inside the Capitol causing the mayhem, should be arrested and charged. Now, there were a lot of people out on the steps of the Capitol, on both sides of the Capitol, and many of them might not have even known what was happening inside. They didn't try to go inside, but they were outside on the Capitol and so forth. Some idiots trying to scale a retaining wall. And I say idiot because there are steps that walk right up there, you idiot. But aside from that, they were doing, based on what Pelosi said, people do what they do. But I'm not going to give any acceptance to what happened at the Capitol riot the other day. But as I said, and I mentioned in a piece I wrote yesterday on the Facebook, it's going to be used as a weapon against any Trump supporter going forward, regardless of your color, your gender, your religion. Things are changing. And then we look at what we're seeing to deprogram. Well, let's punish people like Trump, like wipe out Facebook for him. And anyone else, they might use a phrase, stop the steal. We'll take them off as well. You know who Ben Stein is? Ben Stein, a lawyer, actor, comedian, writer, contributor to the Spectator. He wrote a great piece. Now, Ben Stein, you might best know him for, he had been a speechwriter one time for Nixon and Ford. He's known as the economics teacher in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Where he said, Bueller, Bueller. Well, that was Ben Stein. He's also the one who claimed that Obama was, quote, the most racist president there's ever been in America. Ben Stein wrote a piece for The Spectator titled Goodbye America. Just yesterday, talking about his beautiful day in Malibu Beach the other day, and he said, I had a close relative in a large eastern city, and I asked, what have you been doing all day? And the person said, interesting stuff, a Zoom lecture with a Jewish group about our own racism. And then got into everything else that comes with it and says, these people are encouraging us to go against our own country. Our own country. Are you ready to surrender? You want to hear my next guest? Please stand by. Chris Bedford.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. As I said earlier, according to Kevin McCarthy, congressman from California, in a conversation with President Trump told him, he said, yeah, I bear some responsibility for what happened at the Capitol, the riot. Did not give specifics, not from McCarthy. I haven't seen any specifics. But I told you the other day, as posted on my Facebook, the pledge I was making to you, I said, you will watch for this event to be weaponized against all conservatives and independents, the new race card. It will be used to label you as members of a racist white supremacy cult, a terrorist threat to our nation. And I told you earlier that you got Eugene Robinson of MSNBC, Washington Post columnist, talking about we need to reprogram people, Trump supporters. Christopher Bedford is a senior editor at The Federalist. Christopher, glad to have you on board, sir.
Great to be back.
Well, you wrote a column I had to jump on right away, and it's titled, The Wednesday Riot is No Pass for Republicans to Surrender in the Face of the Government Corporate Crackdown. And we've got crackdowns by companies and, of course, the social media companies and threats by others. Forbes magazine pointing out today that if you and your people hire anybody associated with the Trump campaign or anything, we'll consider you and your company are liars. Where's it go, and what's the next step?
Right now, what we're seeing is this frightening thing where private companies are causing more damage to our freedom than our government is allowed to do, is capable of essentially doing, at least within any of the legal confines, where it's gone well beyond simple social media platforms and shutting down Twitter accounts and exiling conservatives. The lawsuit that's going on right now that's just begun between Parler and Amazon Web Services is an example of this next step of attack they're bringing. Because when you see that Amazon kicks Parler off, but that doesn't mean that Parler can't sell a product anymore, like you buy toothpaste or light bulbs. That was their web hosting service. That was their everything. If you remove the ability of – it's basically the equivalent of turning off the electricity and the water and the gas to your home, as opposed to just saying you can't put a sign in your window. This is the next level of deplatforming. It's spreading across all the companies that do business with places like Amazon or Facebook or Google. They have a lot of reach out there. They're about the most powerful companies that have ever existed, private companies. This is going to get worse and worse, and this is just the opening week. It's since these companies have realized that there's not going to be any Republican oversight of them, and the new Congress and Democrats want them to do this.
Before you joined us, I was also reading some responses of Trump being banned from Facebook and Twitter. Responses from Germany Chancellor Merkel, from France, from Australia, also saying these are the world leaders saying this is bad. You didn't ban Trump because of something he said. You banned him because you don't like him. And they recognize they could face the same situation.
Exactly. And then we saw some of the dissidents against Putin and Russia start even to come out and say, this is a horrible blow to free speech. Now, Angela Merkel is not any friend of Donald Trump.
Nope.
I'm sure she's happy that he's out of office. But
right.
She's looking at that exactly like you said and saying, whoa, this is a next level blow to a world leader from a tech company to try and take away their right to speak. And it's entirely under false pretenses. Just like with the Hunter Biden New York Post fact check, the Twitter promise was coming. No evidence that story was Russian disinformation was ever presented. And just like now, when Parler's been taken off the internet because they say they organized this riot, there's been no evidence at all presented. And just like now, when they're saying that President Donald Trump is inciting violence, we've had years of living, at least in my city and in many cities across the country, of Democratic politicians inciting violence in our streets and political violence going unpunished without any retribution. These are straight up lies.
They're giving it not only no retribution, they give excuses and explanations and acceptance, as Nancy Pelosi even said. They will do what they do. People will do what they do. But not
exactly.
But not if you're a Trump supporter. And again, I'm not, I know you're not, condemning what happened in the Capitol the other day. But to label everyone else with the same brush would be like labeling every person that walks down the street, if they're a Democrat, that they took part in those riots, and they didn't through the summer. And you point out, I mentioned yesterday about the violence that happened outside the White House when 60 security agents were hurt during that attack in demonstration back in May. But you also remind me of something else I'd forgotten about, and that was what happened the night of August 27th.
Yes, the incredible ugliness on the night of August 27th, on the last night of the RNC, when the mob surrounded the White House using the Black Lives Matter park that had been given to them by the Democratic mayor, speaking of inciting riots and violence. They built mock guillotines there. They were setting off low-level fireworks. They were banging drums and screaming curses and threatening chants. I had friends, families, people who were not even in government but were the spouses or children of people in government who were there at the RNC on the final night, hearing these mobs swirl out around them in the dark, and they were texting back and forth, and I was asking, do we need to come down with a group of people to help you get out of there? And they were afraid to have to deal with this and ended up having to flee through the streets holding onto each other.
They attacked a U.S. senator.
Attacked them.
They attacked a U.S. senator.
Attacked Rand Paul and his wife and the police officers trying to defend them as they had to hustle through the streets. And there was not a single condemnation that came out of that attack on Senator Rand Paul and his wife. There was none about the attacks on the police officers or the old man that was punched or the sacred institution that is the home of the executive branch, just like the Capitol is the home of the legislative branch. There's been an outpouring of completely correct Republican and conservative condemnation of the riots, the horrible riots that took place on Wednesday in our Capitol. There was not a peep from the Democrats.
You're listening,
this is the entire kind of double standard.
Yeah, and you're listening, Christopher Bedford, senior editor of The Federalist. And to that point, you also add in your article that 7 months after The Atlantic declared political riots, quote, the American way, and 6 months after Democrats shot down a Senate resolution condemning mob violence, they killed a Senate resolution condemning mob violence, and now suddenly they got all concerned because they can clearly identify it was Trump people.
I couldn't believe that title of that old of that Atlantic piece, that riots, political violence, and political riots are the American way. They said that this is some kind of proud tradition that they had. But that was only true when it was attacking conservatives and attacking Trump fans. Now, I've been to about a half dozen Trump rallies, and about 10 years ago, about a dozen Tea Party rallies. I'd never seen a crowd like I saw down at the Capitol when I was taking pictures and filming on Wednesday. It was certainly an ugly crowd that bore no resemblance to any of the things I've ever seen at some of the MAGA rallies or anything like that. But that crowd, when they attacked people at the institutions of the left, that's when the left said, we're going to stand up against political violence. Now, that sounds like a good thing. All Americans ought to be unified. against violence in our streets for political purposes or really any purposes. But it turns out they're not actually interested in cracking down on political violence. They're not even simply interested in cracking down only on the president. They want to silence all of the 74 million people who voted for the president. And there's very few Republicans left right now who are willing to stand up to them.
Which brings your point of your article. This is no pass for Republicans to surrender. And earlier in this program, I point out Washington Post columnist, MSNBC contributor Eugene Robinson referred to Trump supporters as members of a cult that need to be reprogrammed.
Yeah, so in the Republicans right now, there's a lot of folks here in Washington, D.C. who had long been hoping for Donald Trump to just be behind them in their rearview mirror. The same thing with battles over abortion or wall funding or immigration. They'd prefer to talk about marginal tax rates and this and that and wars, but those are issues that they feel like much more comfortable talking about. Donald Trump made them uncomfortable, and now they've seen an end to throw him and all of his supporters under the bus and try to get a moral card for it and say, hey, we're the good guy. We're the states.
They have no right to stand on such high moral ground.
Exactly. They're completely full of it, and they're just it's a false pretense for them to cut and run and to lie prostrate down on the ground while the Democrats steamroll over their constituents. They don't have a lot of power going into this next Congress with the minorities in both houses, but they do have the ability to stand up and at least give half of America a voice, and I really hope that they'll find the courage to do that.
But we've already talked about, and you point out in your article that I think you use a phrase that they're, let me see, it was they're issuing notes of apology as they're being politically hung. I'm sorry, I'm bad, so bad, we're sorry, we shouldn't have, but I didn't do it.
Exactly.
Don't blame me for it. Don't blame me. I didn't do it.
They'll show up before their political executioners and say, we're very sorry about all the trouble we've caused you. It's just completely insane. And the left is going to look at them and say, apology accepted, and then pull the lever. There's not a lot of mercy right now, politically speaking, that's going around in Washington, D.C., and it would be good for all of the 74 million Americans who voted for the president to still have folks who are there who are willing to stand up and say, this is wrong, this tech censorship will not stand, and you are cracking down on the American public under completely false pretenses.
Christopher, thank you very much for your time. Excellent points. Again, he's a senior editor for The Federalist. The article is titled, Wednesday's Riot is No Pass for Republicans to Surrender. Thank you again. We'll do it again, sir.
Thank you.
You bet. Christopher Bedford. When we come back, there were a couple of pieces I did not get a chance to read in the Ben Stein article. I do want to go back to that because he's very insightful in some things he made. Reference to the climate in America today and what he fears is coming. But I didn't want to cut into the time we had scheduled for Christopher at that point. And also, what do you think is the most popular podcast in the nation right now? Did you say Larry Connors? Did you say Larry Connors podcast? Well, you're wrong. You're wrong, but I'll have the answer, and very interesting, when we continue.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So Ben Stein, in this article for The Spectator we were talking about earlier, was talking about how he was having a conversation with a relative and asking, what have you been doing? They said, oh, I've been on Zoom, and we've been talking about, and they were Jewish. His friend is Jewish, living back east somewhere, and talking about how bad we are, all the things we've done wrong. He said, I didn't even try to correct my relative. I thought, well, I'm not going to ruin my day getting into an argument with him. He said, but basically what we're having with that kind of introspect, he said, it's pure Maoist, communist Chinese self-criticism, confession, happening in our beloved America in the family of even multimillionaires, obviously. He said, it's really true, fellow citizens being taught to hate their own country and themselves. He goes on to talk about what we've seen against Trump now, referenced Twitter and Facebook. And he said, freedom of speech is gone. He said, the media and high-tech barons and princesses have gone completely mad to kill a site called Parler. He said, that was a free speech zone that allowed postings by anyone, left or right, undoubtedly leaving some shocking pictures and words that never should have been run. He points out, this is no precedent for the shutdown of free speech. Nazis and Muslim terrorists still have use of the Internet, but only the president, who got more than 70 million votes, is cut off. And he said, what's worse, I read every word of Trump's January 6th speech to his supporters, talking about in advance of that riot. He said, there's not one single word of incitement to lawlessness. And in fact, Trump explicitly tells fans, be peaceful. In summation of his article for the American Spectator, Ben Stein wrote, Joe Biden has not even been sworn in yet. He said the powers in media and politics have ended free speech in America, and Joe Biden has not even been sworn in yet. These are terrifying times. Goodbye, America. Yep. The other day, I posted a piece that was a pledge to you. It still appears at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Many have responded already. It's still posted again at Larry Connors USA Facebook. It'll be down the page because here shortly, Quentin will be posting today's programs as podcasts. For those folks who miss hearing it live, we always put them up as a podcast later in the day. Well, in fact, he's normally done within 15 minutes after we sign off. So by the next 20 minutes, he'll probably have them up. So you can go down the page and you'll see the pledge. And the podcast, we have a lot of folks relying on them and so forth. And I'm glad, because it gives you another opportunity if you miss the program. Podcast for a lot of folks, just, you know, they just don't get into it. But if you miss something or you want to get something, it's the only source, okay, that's one. There is now a report out in National Review on the most popular podcast in the nation. Oh, I saw that. Oh, I got to read this. This has got to be Larry Connors USA. I jumped to it and I see the story, and I'm not disappointed. It's not Larry Connors USA podcast. The title says, The Bible in a Year is the most popular podcast in the U.S. This is a scripture study podcast. They say it's at the top of Apple's charts, ahead of major news shows and Larry Connors. Oh, they don't add that. I'll do that. And they say that is a hopeful sign in the darkness. It's hosted by Father Mike Schmitz, who's a Catholic priest, public speaker, directs a young adult ministry in the Diocese of Duluth, Minnesota. Each episode, about 25 minutes in length, and features Father Schmitz, who refers to himself and all of his listeners as Father Mike, reading scripture aloud, exploring its historical context, theological meaning. And during the first week of episodes, he read through several chapters of the book of Genesis, several of the Psalms, chapters of the books of Job and Proverbs. He said, What should we make of the fact that the Bible in a Year podcast has spent more than a week on top of the charts ahead of long-running news and even crime podcasts, the Ben Shapiro show even? I'm sorry, Ben, but you didn't make it either. The author says it's maybe hard to understand, but it should be seen as a blazing sign of hope. Many of us are hungry for more than the news, for rest within a world fraught with division. And it should console us to recall that we're far from the first in the history of nations to face plague and terror. And it should also remind us of a truth more powerful. The Bible's story of sin and suffering is answered by the story of a Savior. The Bible in a Year, the most popular podcast at this point. The author says, this kind of success, especially when it reaches young people, doesn't really get the attention of the mainstream media, the pundits and papers. Why should they? We believe that our neighbors are our enemies, and we need to rely on politics. But I like her closing line. Let us take heart that so many are turning to Scripture for a foothold in this time. I agree. In fact, let me add, amen. We'll be back tomorrow. Please remember our pledge. One God.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.